the 2018 Philcast Supplemental, Mick McMahon, Part 2. Borag Thung, Earthlitz, and welcome back to our two-part Mick McMahon interview on the Thrillcast Supplemental. Thank you so much for the kind words about part number one a couple of weeks ago. It's great to know that you enjoyed it. It was an absolute pleasure and an honour to be able to sit with Mick and talk about his life and work. We've now got the second part where we move on to not just his work on Slain, but also Robusters, and further on into his later career. More great insights from this absolute master of British comics. So, without much further ado, let's get back to Mick. That leads us neatly on to talking about Slain, because your work on Warriors Dawn, Beltane Giant, Heroes Blood, Shoggy Beast, Sky Chariots was such a contrast to the stuff you've been doing on Robusters and Judge Dredd. How did you come to develop such a unique style for Slain?
Well, Slain was supposed to be Celtic, because I'm really keen on sort of history and stuff, and I'd got loads of books on Celts, and I read Celtic legends and all that stuff, Dark Ages and whatever. And this is something I really love. I'm going to really love drawing this. And so I spent must have been a month just working on the first page.
Wow.
And not because they were probably about 20 first pages. Right. But I just couldn't get it right. So I had a vague idea what I wanted it to look like. Hmm. So what I did was I inked it really quick and then traced that on tracing paper much more carefully. Hmm. And it looked okay. So what I would do was that then I'd go up to this print place and they'd dry mount it on board. But what happened was, because it was on tracing paper, there's lots of places where I hadn't put the black in properly.
Right.
And I thought, that looks good. I thought, that looks like kind of Celtic,
Like a woodcutty kind of thing. Yeah.
So I thought, I can do it. But after a while, I was doing it properly. I was drawing on the paper. So I was drawing it on watercolour paper. That time. I stopped using Prisma board. And drawing it with these sort of fiber tip pens, which made it sort of much easier to do that sort of drawing.
Yeah.
And in the end, I did enjoy doing that. And at the time, I that was probably my most successful thing in terms of being happy with it. And in the end, I could draw, I don't know if you remember the episode where the volcano explodes.
Yeah.
But two of the pages in that I drew in one night. Right. I managed to do, and they look pretty good. And also the storytelling in that's very good. I was really pleased with that. But even on that, you can see at the end on that story, Skyship story, the last episode, I think, where the, what's his name, Slough, is it Slough?
Oh, Slough Feg.
Slough Feg. Yeah. No, it's not Feg, it's the other one. I think, is it Slough Throt? Let's get our sloughs right.
Listen to us, grown men.
Let's call it Stain. But anyway, even on that one, though, you can see I'm especially on the page where he's getting eaten by the worms, it's formulaic by then.
Right, okay.
No one else can see it, but I can see that's formulaic.
You'd reached that stage.
That's the point now where it's losing its energy, for me anyway.
Because Sky Chariots, just that page where they're fighting, that's full single page where they're fighting and people are tumbling out of the ships and one of them's on fire and just the amount of detail.
It's great. I love doing that. Yeah, that looks all right. But when I delivered that to my agent, I showed it to him. He looked at it. It's a bit self-indulgent, isn't it?
That's one way
way of looking at it, I suppose.
Yeah. So, well, you see, they, to them, it's a business, isn't it? Yeah. You know, they don't want any fancy Dan people who don't, you know, they want to keep churning stuff out so they get the money.
Wow.
You know, so.
That's
well, no, to be fair, I mean, they did have, I mean, they had some really great book illustrators on their books, you know, so we used to work on sort of Look and Learn and stuff like that. Yeah. So they did handle the best people, but I suppose, you know, might have been a bit tongue-in-cheek.
But that start, I mean, I remember reading Shoggy Beast when it was in the Best of 2018 Monthly, and there's something about it, it's so earthy, it's so deep. I mean, I remember poring over it and trying to work out how you had done it, and trying to replicate it, failing miserably. But there's a weight to it, there's a gravity, as you say, it looks old, it looks like an old style, you know. Yeah. I find it fascinating that comes out of just your method. That was almost
it's not just a method, is it? Because I'm sure that because it's supposed to be, I'm trying to create something that looks, that is old.
Yeah.
And so it can't be done with a brush and feathering for me. Mm. It can't be done like that. Because they didn't have brushes and feathering in the dark. You know,
what? Yeah.
It can't be like that. So in my own head, it's got to be something that feels iron.
Mm. You know, right, yeah, yeah.
Or there are no machines here. You know, everything's held together with string and you know, wood strapped together.
I always liked when you did the big standing stones with the kind of Celtic swirls on them. Always loved how they looked as if they'd been hewn out of rock, because they were lots of straight edges rather than, you know, it being nice and smooth. It looked like somebody had gone in with a, you know, a bit of granite.
Yeah. Yeah. Chipping away. Yeah. It had to look like that for me. It couldn't look any other way.
So. I mean, that was kind of the that firmly established that period of the late 70s into the sort of mid 80s as like the golden age. That was one of the strips that kind of solidified that in many people's minds. And it's good to know that you've enjoyed it, that you felt it was good. What made you want to move on from 2008 at that point?
I don't know really.
Because obviously the British invasion was Dick Giordano and
I didn't get involved in that. Right. I could have been. I messed that up because Dave, we were going off to London to meet Dick Giordano and who was it? Joe Orlando.
Yeah.
And we went out of it together, and Dave said, "It'll be all right as long as you're not saying anything stupid." And I didn't quite say anything stupid, but I think we were talking at cross purposes, because they really wanted people to come and draw, you know, American superhero comics.
Yeah.
I've never been interested in drawing them. So, I mean, they offered me a book called Warlords. Which I didn't do, but it was a graphic novel. But the artist who did do it, did such a great job. I thought it was a good job they didn't get me to do it, because it looks great. It was beautifully done.
Yeah.
It's in sort of full colour and stuff. So, but I was going to work with, was it Archie Goodwin? Because I always loved Archie's work, writing. And because I remember once when I was a kid, 11 or 12, I think, whatever it was. But our next door neighbour, who's really, he's a kid I didn't really like, I didn't get on with him very much. But for some reason, he gave me a copy of Blazing Combat, which I thought, where the hell did he get it from? He wasn't interested in comics. But anyway, he gave me this Blazing Combat, and I thought, this is the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
And there was Archie. Anyway, so I was going to work with Archie, so I phoned him up, you know, and I said, I'd like to do some work. He says, great. So he wrote a script for me. But then I got ill, and I was ill for about 3 years. And by that time, Epic had been folded, so there wasn't anywhere for this script to go. Mm. But then I did, that was Epic Magazine.
Mm.
But he was still doing Epic Comics, so he was doing The Last American. So that's how that came about. Mm. But I didn't actually stop working for 2000 AD as a Because, I mean, I haven't got a career. I don't think it's a career. It's just sort of careering along, yeah. Is it a career?
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, it's... Because, I mean, yeah, you go to work, you get made an assistant manager. That's a career, isn't it?
That's one kind of career, but I guess ultimately...
It's work.
It's work.
Yeah.
And you progress and you evolve and you change and you move on.
Yes. I suppose it's been at school, you've got a careers officer. I don't think they ever say, do what I do.
What are you going to be when you grow up? Going to tell other people what their careers are? Okay.
Well, was it Howard Chaykin put it? He said, yeah, I'm going to dress like a teenager for the rest of my life. And that's what you do. Yeah. Something like Frank Hampson and his suit and tie, you know, I think that's extraordinary. See people drawing, wearing, you know, dressed to the nines. You know, I don't dress like that when I go to a wedding or
something. But it's the artist of a certain generation. I mean, you know, we talked about Ron Smith in the pub,
yeah.
and you know, it was a job. You were a journeyman, so you dressed as you would for an office job.
Oh yeah, when it's in an office. Well, it's self-respect as well, isn't it? In those days. I mean, my dad, he wore a collar and tie because he was a welder, but he used to wear a collar and tie and took it off when he got there. He put his boiler suit on.
Yeah,
but you know, that's how everyone had to do it.
Yeah. So. You did work on Legends of the Dark Knight with
Chuck Dixon. I worked twice with Chuck, and I've never had any correspondence with him in the whole of my life.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I did that with him, and I did the Alien Legion with him, which I really like the Alien Legion.
Yeah, yeah.
But like I said, I did the Batman book for money, and so it was an utter failure, really. So it's not, it doesn't motivate me, really, doing stuff for money. So.
Well, I mean, it's. I think it's notable that when we were talking about when you were a kid and your influences, superheroes never came up.
I used to read them. I used to love reading them, but I never wanted to draw them. So it was weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I used to collect Marvel comics and some DC comics, and I did the thing, you know, like, oh, this month I'll arrange them in alphabetical order, and next month it'll be all the month's comics are in the same, you know, mad stuff you do. So I did all that. Yeah, I used to love reading them, but I never, ever wanted to draw them.
Right. Well, that's interesting. Do you feel there was any influence in how you drew from those? Or was it...
Well, I suppose there must have been, I suppose. But I always thought that... Because I used to read British comics, which was always in black and white, which meant they had to have a lot more drawing in them.
That is one way of putting it, yeah.
Well, when you're a kid, so that's how you look at the world. You think, oh, look all the detail.
Mm.
Whereas an American comic to me looked like, well, if there wasn't any colour in it, you know, there's nothing there, is there? Like, it's just... There's a few lines.
That's really interesting because a lot of the time, particularly when we do the American shows, you know, people will pick up one of our sort of classic books and will flick through it and will put it down because it's not in colour.
Yeah.
And they don't read black and white.
That's right. Yeah.
You just picked up Halo Jones. You just picked up Case Files number 5. You know, these are the best comics you'll read, but no colour, no read.
It's like people won't watch black and white films anymore, won't they?
Yeah. Well, there was that horrible
fools.
There was that horrible phase when Turner, what's his face, Turner colourised loads and loads of black and white films in the 70s. Yeah. And George Lucas testified before Congress, I think, or something like that, to say how this was vandalism and how you shouldn't tinker with something.
Yeah.
Ironically, told the American government it shouldn't tinker with works of art after they've been released.
Because there's a similar story about, because the colourisation process as well, if you take the colour out, again, the black and white looks terrible.
Yeah.
But they colourised Laurel and Hardy films. And they asked Hal Roach what he thought of it. He said, don't make them no funnier.
Brilliant. I wanted to talk about Toxic.
Yeah.
Because I remember as a young 2000 AD fan, Toxic was like a bolt from the blue. It was completely unexpected. I'd never experienced comics like it, even reading 2000 AD. How did you come to be involved? Because it was a creator-driven thing. How did you come to be involved in Toxic?
Is it Jeff Thingy? the guy published it. I can't remember his second name. he just asked us all for a meeting. So there's John and Alan and Pat and me and Kevin. And I don't know if there's anyone else there. But so that's how that started. And he was going to put all this money into it and all the rest of it. But I didn't enjoy it at all, really.
Right.
I didn't like the strip I was doing.
Mutomaniac.
Yeah, I didn't like that. It sounded like a good idea, but I didn't enjoy it. And especially when in the rest of the comic, it was like, if I felt like a bit of a throwback, actually.
Right.
Because it was the other stuff was so wild.
Yeah, you had Will Simpson and who was doing Pat Mills's, what was it called, Sex Warrior.
Yeah, it was like really mad stuff. So yeah. The one I was doing, I thought this is like pretty, I feel like I'm working on the sort of bean or something. But anyway, I couldn't keep up with the pace because I was supposed to do 6 pages a week at colour. So I could manage 3. That's why it kept being split out. And in the end, I just stopped. Because the people weren't getting paid, so I stopped. Didn't do this.
I mean, one of the reasons why certainly that's been cited for Toxic starting up was the lack of royalties that were being paid at the time to creators and the lack of sort of creative control. Was that something that you felt passionate about at the time, or...?
Not really, no.
Okay.
No, I mean, you can either sort of worry about things like that and not get much work done, because it's hard if you're going to feel bitter about things. It's hard to do work.
Right.
You know, you can't think I'm doing this work and I'm not going to get bloody paid for it and the rest of it. So I mean, yeah, it would have been nice to own something that, you know, you got proper royalties on, but at the same time you think, well, IPC, or it was the IPC at the time of Fleetway, but they've got all the distribution set up, they're going to sell far more comics than we are.
Yeah.
So where are you going to get the money, all the money from? Because you unless you're doing something, you think, oh, this is really good and I own it, and in 5 years someone might want to make a film of it and it'll be reprinted and all the rest of it. But the thing I was doing would never see the light of day again. So there's that as well. So, and I think we own The Last American, but it's been, what, reprinted once. People are all saying they're going to make a film of it. It hasn't been a film. Has there? So,
not that I'm aware of.
No. So you know, you own something, but it doesn't make anything like the money that I make from working to work for hire companies, really. Unless you've got something that you really is a personal thing that you really believe in, I find it hard to be motivated, to be honest, because I think, well, I own this, yeah, but it's no good. What's the point of owning something that's no good?
Right. Okay.
I mean, I suppose that the Mutomaniac, if I had another artist, might have been much better, but I didn't enjoy it, like I said.
I mean, not long after Toxic went the way of all flesh, you actually came back to Judge Dredd with Howler, with a radically different... From the last time you'd been in the pages of 2000 AD,
yeah.
It was radically, radically different. Was that a consequence of having worked on things like The Last American and Mutomaniac, or was it again this sense of, well, I need to move on, I need to change my direction?
I think I've been doing, in between this stuff, I've been doing designs for films.
Right.
And they'd become, the way I was drawing those things was very spare. And that kind of carried on into this the comic then, really. So it wasn't like a leap from one's comic style to another one.
Yeah.
There was this other work in between. And I just like the idea of just doing things as no shadow, no black.
Yeah.
See if I can make it work. So, because if it was I did do one strip in black and white like that. Was in an annual, was it a yearbook about the Mean Machine?
Right.
I'm still really happy with that. But it's the same principle. But although I did put spot a few blacks in that, but with the Howler, I'm not going to put any blacks in. I'm just going to, because I had this weird way of using markers that make it look all textured and what have you. So, and I thought it worked all right. The only thing I didn't like what I did about it was I should have put proper gutters between the panels.
Right.
Since it was such minutiae, haunt us to the grave, don't they? Yeah. I thought I'd be on my deathbed thinking, you know, like, damn, I wish I'd put proper gutters on the Howler. You know?
It was a strip that this is something that's, you know, entered 2080 lore. It was a strip that divided the readership because I think a lot of people were expecting the Mick McMahon that they'd been reading back in the early 80s to sort of magically reappear, but you'd moved far, far beyond that point.
Well, it's lucky for me, I suppose, that I was never aware of that.
Right.
Because I'd by then I'd more or less stopped going to conventions and things, so I wasn't aware of anything like that. Because if I'd known that, if there was this expectation, I probably wouldn't have been able to do anything at all. You know? It just froze. So, it was just the way I was doing it. I didn't think anything, really. And I mean, I would have thought if, because it's David Bishop was the editor then. I mean, I thought if it wasn't what he wanted, he'd say so, you know. Or would he? You know, that's the thing. Because then you think, well, I'm supposed to be the great Mike McMahon. You know, is he too frightened to say, you know, this is rubbish? You know? I don't know. You know, that's the problem. You get to a point where everything gets a bit mixed up, really. You think, well, because I was at the point where I did say to him, because I phoned him. Actually, I got in touch with him about doing that, I think. Because I said, oh, the days are gone where you get in touch with me. I'm not having to get in touch with you. So I thought I'm on the way down now. So, like I said, then you do a bit of it, and you think, well, does he like it? But you can't really ask him. I suppose you could ask him, but I mean, then it puts him on the spot. You know, so it gets a bit awkward, isn't it?
The thing is, with the style on Howler, it despite all your uncertainty about, you know, whether. Your choice is the correct ones and your confidence in your art, it does betray a certain degree of confidence that you would come back with such a bold change. Because I'm sure there are artists who, in that situation, would come back and try and do the same thing.
Because of the way my work has evolved, I couldn't do it the other way. Right. I mean, a man did a book, what was it? I think it was one of the first things about Judge Dredd.
Yeah. I can't remember. Was it the Mega History?
That's the one, yeah. Because I did the cover for it. Yes. Mean Machine.
Yeah.
Now, he said, I want the cover to look like it. You know. And I delivered it by hand because he was working in Harpenden and I was living in Tunstall. So I just drove down there. It was great. He gave me the cheque over the, as soon as he, like, one hand. You know. But he looked at it and goes, oh, yeah, it's not quite what I had. But, you know, what was he going to do? You know, but I tried, but I couldn't do it. So it's not that I thought, oh, I'm throwing all that out. It's just I couldn't do it. Whereas now I've evolved to the point where I could do it.
Right, okay.
It's strange, isn't it? You know, it's weird, isn't it, really?
Well,
I can't believe I haven't gone mad.
Tattered Banners.
Yeah.
Which story discontented social worker Curtis Banner. Now, that sounds like a wonderfully British premise for a story.
Yes.
But
it was Keith Giffen.
Yeah. But in terms of your style, I mean, this was, you're knocking on into the kind of Howler territory.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, after I did the Howler or before? I you know, this is these are the lost years. Yeah. You know? I don't know. I can't remember. Between sort of 90 and 2000. It's all a bit vague. Nothing to do with drugs, I guess. But that style evolved quite quickly through that, because it started off quite... I like the artwork on that, actually, at the beginning, especially the start of it. But that's quite angular to start with. But at the end, it's quite... a lot of curves in it.
Yeah.
It changed quite a bit. But, yeah, I sort of enjoyed that. So it was cancelled halfway through, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I got a call from... I can't remember his name now. Art Young, I think it was. Because he was working, he had an office in London, DC office in London.
Uh-huh.
And he said, we're thinking of cancelling this book. What do you think? Because Keith wasn't sending in the scripts or something. Right. So I said, well, if I've got something else to do, I don't mind. And he said, yeah, I've got loads of work for you. So I said, well, fine then, you know. So he cancelled it. And I said, what you got for me? He says, nothing. But anyway, a few years later, they thought we'd revive it. Actually, what made it difficult, though, was because I'd been getting paid in advance.
Right.
And so I'd already been paid for about six pages of it. So I had to start this book again, drawing pages I'd been paid for like 2 years or 3 years before.
Ouch. So,
but anyway, I got it done in the end.
Hmm.
I drew that in 96, 97.
Oh, is it that late?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Because we'd moved to Yorkshire by then, because I remember I was sitting in my studio in Yorkshire and doing that.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so it must have been after the Howler. Because I used to deliver the Howler pages to the office, which I couldn't have done from Yorkshire.
No.
Although when I did Sonic the Comics stuff, I sometimes delivered them when they were so late.
Oh, really? Well,
but just show willing, I'll drive down.
Terribly sorry. There
you go.
There you go.
There's pages.
Have you thought about? You mentioned about being able to go back to your old style and reproduce it. Is that what you're going to do? You're going to try and reproduce?
Well, no, because my current way of drawing is similar to that, but not the same.
Right, okay.
So it's a bit spidery lines and big fat pens filling in with black things, but not. It's not careful at all, really. Mm. It's much more. It's much looser, because that I find having to draw a line that's, you know, like. Goes along and there's never a wobble.
Yeah,
I've been doing that for a couple of years now, and that's driving me mad as well. You know, so.
You did that ABC Warriors story. This is a good long while back, where it seemed to be a kind of mix of two styles between your kind of Last American, the sparse line stuff.
Was that the tripod stuff?
Yeah, yeah. And but that much more detailed. Harking back to like Blockmania,
that because I think that was a story where I thought I shall eschew the Howler thing. I'm not impervious to that. I mean, someone's like Picasso with a broken arm.
Yeah.
So, but I thought I had been going that way a bit anyway because I'd done some more design work, which had involved a bit slightly more detailed kind of drawing. So I thought that I would, because I'd got a computer by then,
yeah.
So what I was able to do was do the pencils and print them out and ink on that.
Right.
So I could experiment without losing the pencils.
I get you.
So I was able then to sort of combine that kind of, I was pleased with that. Yeah, there was a lot of black in that, a lot of shadows, a lot of detail.
Yeah.
But yeah, it wasn't as, what would be the word? I can't think of the word now. Obsessive as trying to draw the ABC Warriors was. Because
right.
that wasn't relaxed, but right. The first ABC Warriors wasn't relaxed or robust, but that ABC Warriors tripod story was. I was much more confident about that one.
Sonic the Comic, which is not where I think anybody thought Mick McMahon would end up drawing for. But you did that for quite a while, didn't you? A
couple of years, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I didn't have anything else to do at the time. And I got a call from Deborah Tate, and she had to do a sort of test piece. But I enjoyed doing that, and it was nice, easy work. You could I can't come on a lot on that as well, because that's where I started using lettering pens.
Yeah.
So I'd have like thick and thin lines, which I'd always been trying to avoid before, because it's a bit like a brush, because me and brushes don't mix. You know?
Right.
But because I used to try and work with brush, and it's terrible. It's like club handy. But no, I enjoyed that, and I enjoyed the colouring as well, and it paid quite well. And
because that's Richard Elson as well.
Yeah,
he used to do a lot. Yeah. And that's a comic that inspired quite a lot of fans to keep, because it was resurrected by the fans at one point, I think.
Was it?
Yeah,
I know there's a huge wiki page. I've read some terrible things about me on it. As well. That was when I used to read about myself on the internet.
Always a bad idea to learn
my lesson.
Yeah. You know? it seems an odd place for you to end up.
Yeah, it would, wouldn't it? Yeah, because I think the because I started off doing Decap Attack, which was written by Nigel Kitchen.
Yeah.
And those were really nice little scripts. They're beautiful little stories, and they're nice characters. And he'd set it in medieval times or whatever. You know, and it was lovely things to draw.
Mm.
Actually, Sonic himself, I wasn't. You know, he was okay. But I mean, it's it didn't really hold my interest, because it's not a character I really liked.
Yeah.
So I've always preferred Mario. So.
This was the time that you started using.
Because I started doing Sonic with a computer, and because I inked this story, and I was determined it wasn't going to look like all those other horrible comics that are coloured with Photoshop, where they just get a bit of airbrush, and they look so thin and weedy, you know. And, like, and so I spent ages doing this. I'm going to work out a way to make it look like the way I colour with markers.
Yeah.
And the first go was a bit of a naff attempt, but after that I thought it was working all right. And I've actually got my computer colouring to the point now where it doesn't look like computer colouring at all.
Right. So
I'm pretty pleased with that.
Is it? Does it look more like when you're using markers? Have you?
Yeah, it's like a computer. Sort of markers and paint, it looks like.
Right, okay.
Mind you, there's if you look on the internet, there's concept art that looks like it's done by Canaletto or something. It's all done in computers, isn't it? It's just wonderful what I can do. So, but my yardstick was just comic colouring. I wasn't going to try and compete with the fellas that do that good stuff. So,
do you still work traditionally?
Yeah, I did try inking with the Manga Studio, and I suppose if I bought a Cintiq or something, it might be different. But I've just gone back to drawing on paper, and it's much better, I think. It's much quicker for me, anyway. it's easier to correct things. Because what I found was I do just one line.
Yeah,
you know, and I think, oh, that's not good, is it? To undo. Oh.
For somebody who has issues,
it's fatal,
never get it right.
Colouring's all right, colouring fine, but not drawing.
It's cropped up a couple of times now where you've talked about films that you've worked on, and you've also worked on computer games. How has that evolved? How did you get into that in the first place? Was there a project where that kicked it all off?
Well, I don't think I've ever. I certainly haven't got a name as someone who does that,
right.
So I don't get any work on the strength of work I've done.
Okay.
Other than comics, that's how I get that work. I mean, the first was in 1990. What was a draw at that time? Still drawing Judge Dredd, first time around. But there was a sort of science fiction cartoon. I started doing some designs for that. But that was just like a pitch. Mm. So it wasn't going to be real. So it wasn't made as most of them aren't. It would have been a good film. But then the guy from that, one of the guys from that, he was going to be directing one of the films on the BBC Bible animation series, Testament, it was called.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And so I worked on the Elijah one. So right. I designed all the characters for that. And they animated it in my style, which is really weird. But I mean, it looked good, but at the same time, it's a bit disconcerting. Yeah. You know? You think, I don't remember drawing that. You know? And then, same guy again, I did designed a load of characters for a film about the New Testament.
Mm.
Then actually got some work with ComX, who wanted a lot of concept work done for a game they were going to do all the concept work for Sony.
Mm.
So I did that with two other artists whose names escaped me because I'm trying to remember so many names this afternoon. I probably might think of them in a minute. And following on from that, I thought this is great, you know, working in computer games. I like this because we used to go and visit the studio where they would make the game, you know, I'd talk to the animators and stuff like that. And I thought, oh, I like this. So I sent a CD into Climax Games in Brighton to see if they wanted any concept. And they gave me a job as an artist, but actually I was an environment artist there. They trained me out to use like 3D stuff.
So, oh, right, okay.
So I did the Egyptian environment. Who would have thought an Egyptian environment in a racing game? But I did that, and then I got made redundant from there. Worked on two games then, and made redundant. And so I was offered a job then, because you know, all these people move on. So there was another place that people I'd worked with had gone to work in Croydon at Razorback Studios. So they were doing a game, Warhammer, for the N-Gage, for the phone that time forgot.
Yeah.
And that was great. They worked on that. And then they did another game, Shaolin Showdown.
Oh, yeah.
So I did sort of environments for that. And got made redundant from there.
I'm sensing a pattern.
Yeah, it's a precarious business. Games. Well, they, despite their best efforts, they come to a point where they got no project.
Mm.
So you know, people got to go. And so then I got a call to go and work in Brighton again at Kuju Studios. They were going to do a game because Guitar Hero had come out. So they were going to do one based on drums.
Right.
So I had to design these drummers and environments where they play their drums.
Yeah.
Got made redundant from there. For about 5 months. And so that's when what did I do then, actually? I'm trying to think what happened then. Oh, no, that's when I did Tank Girl.
Right.
That's what I did next. I messed about for a couple of months. And then trying to get some more work in games. I mean, it is nice after if you're self-employed all the time. The idea of being able to sit there and think, you know, I can't think of a bloody thing for this, and think, oh, but I'm still getting paid. It just makes such a nice change, you know, rather than thinking, I've lost 3 days, I'm not getting a move. You know. But no, three redundancies in sort of 4.5 years is a bit too much. So. So I thought, I'll go and do comics again. So that's when I did Tank Girl.
Mm.
But I did Tank Girl because when I'd been working in games, I'd been just using Photoshop all day, really. So I'd worked out some nice ways to use that for colour and to mess about with pencils.
Mm. What effect did that have on your style?
Well, it made it a bit more, brought it back to being a bit more realistic,
yeah.
I think, because the games I worked on were quite stylized, but at the same time they're all realistic lighting, don't they, and stuff like that. So, which is weird about games. I mean, they can obviously look like anything, and yet they all look the same now. Really, well, they do, don't they?
Yeah.
You get might the odd independent game that's very quirky and what have you. But no, most of them just look, they just wanted to look real. And mind you, that's what people like, I think. I remember when I worked in Lyons Corner House on a Saturday, and I told that they, because they knew what I was doing, I said I've got an interview at the art school. Oh, can we see what you do? You know, so I brought my portfolio into Lyons Corner House, and all the comments I didn't want to know, but there was I copied a photograph of of all things, an American anti-tank gun crew in the Philippines or something. But because I copied a photograph, they go, oh, that's a nice one, because it looked real, see? Because that's what people like.
Yeah.
So actually, all this time I've spent not doing realistic stuff, you know, I'm a fool to myself. People don't like it. And I know that, you know, I've learned that when I was 15, I was when that happened, 16. Yeah, but anyway, that's what it did, though. It gave me, it became a bit, a lot more sort of realistic.
Mm.
Well, in as much as what I do could be called realistic.
But then you come onto something like Tank Girl, where realism is not necessarily the
I shouldn't really have done that. I shouldn't really have done that, Tank Girl.
So, really?
No, it was, I didn't really fit with that. But I suck at it, I finished it. So. But... No, it was. I think I wasn't tuned into the character at all, really.
Right. It seems an odd
fit. I think by then, I at that stage anyway, I was more, or maybe I am now, but more illustrative rather than narrative.
Mm.
I mean, the storytelling was still there, but
yeah.
I think I had one of those Zen moments or something where you suddenly you can. Well, I think that's why with Sonic, because I could draw. I thought, well, I'm just enjoying drawing, rather than worrying about what I'm drawing, or is it a good story, or I can now just draw, do it, and draw it well enough for it to be acceptable. So.
How did you come to be working on Tank Girl?
I think it was through who was it? I got a call from. Titan.
Right.
And they said, do you want to draw a Tank Girl? Because I haven't got anything else to do. See, this is my another thing about that. Because I should say, well, hang on, have a think. You know, just think. But I just said, yeah, I'll do that. Because, I mean, I like Tank Girl, but I didn't realise that when it's drawn by me, I wouldn't like it. Because, I mean, Jamie Hewlett, the way he's just wonderful. So so maybe I had that hanging over me as well. But they did want it a new Tank Girl. See, that was the problem as well. That they wanted it to look different, completely different.
Yeah.
And it started off looking completely different, and then they lost their nerve and said, oh, can you put a plaster on her face? Because to start off, she didn't have another plaster on her face.
Right, okay. Seems a random.
She just
addition.
Looked like a blonde girl.
Right. I get you. Okay. Alien Legion.
Ah, yeah, the Alien Legion. That's Chuck Dixon again.
So yeah.
I'm like Chuck.
that's a subject in a book that you know seems to perfectly suit the kind of style that you had at the time, especially.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that, and I got that because I was in hospital. And I got a letter in hospital from Carl. I can't remember his name. The guy that started Alien Legion, Carl. You have to look it up. No. Anyway, I got a letter from him,
and I
wrote back to him. Said, "Yeah," because he wasn't actually asking me to do that then, but that's how we got in touch with each other. You know, so I suppose he sent me a fan letter, really.
Okay.
Carl Potts.
Yeah, right.
Got there. And just chipped the Alzheimer meter to the old timers. And so we had been in touch. So he then, you know, when the opportunity arose, so he said, well, do you want to draw this book? So I said, yeah, lovely. And I really enjoyed it. But I got really late with that and drew the bulk of it in about 3 days.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it did about 30 pages in 3 days.
Wow.
With my wife doing the colouring, a lot of the colouring, so, under my strict supervision.
Oh, of course, yeah.
But we got it done, so, and it was a good book. I enjoyed it. I still like looking at it. So, And it was a good story, because Jack Dixon, he writes, if he was a writer for Hollywood, he'd be writing 50s westerns.
Right.
You know, okay. With, James Stewart. You know, the proper westerns, yeah, not the sort of fillers. Because he can write that kind of stuff, good characters, good plots, and good dialogue. You know?
Yeah. So,
not trying to change the world, just entertaining. So that worked out all right. That was pretty good.
In terms of looking back on your career, you talked a bit about how 2000 AD is, you know, a fundamental part of that, whether it's sort of front and centre or part of the background. And we've talked about how your level of confidence in your abilities has waxed and waned.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you now?
I'm really confident now.
All right.
I am, yes. I finally got there. I'm really happy with my work now, because I think I could draw anything.
Okay.
Because that's what I was saying about the sort of Zen thing. That's what I learned on Sonic. Because when I was 25, if someone said, "Do you want to draw Sonic a comic?" I go, "Oh, I'm not drawing that. You know, what do you think I am?" You know, that sort of snottiness you've got when you're young and full of yourself. But now I could put my mind to anything, really, and get something out of it. I'd learn something, because I think that's what I was trying to express really when I'm saying things get formulaic. You don't stretch yourself anymore. No. You don't try and do something, not clever, but something you thought you couldn't do. It's something as simple as drawing someone from sort of three quarters of you from behind them, which, you know, you tend to avoid because it's not an easy thing to do. Because people, unless you know what you're doing, so if you draw a full-on face, everyone knows what a face looks like, so they just don't even think about it. You know, think, oh, it's his face. But if you draw something from a really odd angle, it's got to be really well drawn, or people they'll think, what's that? Because I remember seeing when I first saw Richard Corbin, his colour work he used to do, and because it was very photorealistic, and he'd done a drawing of a fist, a close-up of a fist, but it was so lifelike, it didn't look like a fist anymore, because you think, a fist don't look like that. You know what I mean? It's kind of a you got to make things recognisable, really. I mean, he's turned into a wonderful artist. He's seen that, his Hellboy in Mexico stuff.
You've seen
that? Mm. It's just superb. See, I mean, that's what I've managed to do as well, because I used to think, if I looked at a comic and I thought, that's no good, right? And I feel really pleased about myself. Or I'd look at it and go, oh, Christ, how can he do that? How old is he? You know, it's like, so it's either one thing or the other. But now I've got over that, and I can just enjoy good stuff and, you know, look at other stuff and think, well, you know, I might look at that.
You used the word struggle earlier. I presume that this Zen moment is that it's not as much of a struggle as it used to be.
No, it's not. Mm. Well, it is and it isn't. It depends what... If I get on a roll, I know things will be okay, and they won't be like before. They won't just dissolve into disinterest. I will be able to sort of make it better as I go along. But the initial thing to start things now, is just as hard as it ever was, I think. But that doesn't put me off anymore. Now I'm much more confident about getting things off the ground.
Do you think that's a consequence of working in away from comics in movies and games, that it's a different kind of environment where you're not necessarily playing catch up with yourself constantly? There's not that drive to get the pages out.
Not really. No, it's just it's all, you know, it's about OCD, I suppose. Because it's because, like I said, when I was a child, I started to think all the time about drawing, about being doing art. And that's all I ever thought. I mean, the idea that even if I worked at something completely different, I would still think I was an artist.
Yeah.
So all the things that go on in my head are about being an artist and think. I mean, I posted my blog about it where I was at a football match and I saw a man was standing on the touchline and he had a white hoop around his tracksuit bottom. Mm. And he'd stood in such a way that it was it just was sort of conjoined with the sideline.
Right.
And I was just fascinated by that, you know, like, so all the time I'm looking at things, although a lot of the time I think, oh God, no wonder I can't draw. Look, that's what a nose looks like. but it's all the time. See, it's constant. Yeah.
Well, you questioned whether you had a career, but everything that you've said suggests that you're more akin to having a vocation than necessarily a job, that this is such an intrinsic part of you and how you view the world.
Yeah.
That, of course, it doesn't seem like a career because it's natural.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
to the way you view the world.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is. Is it an obsession? I don't know. I suppose it is. Is it? I don't know. It's just what I am. You know, it's hard. I couldn't not be like that.
Yeah.
It has to be conscious. Even if conscious effort wouldn't stop it, I don't think.
Because looking back to that 22-year-old kid who was drawing Judge Dredd, unbeknownst as to what Judge Dredd was and was going to be, how do you feel about that? About that? How do you feel about the journey that you've made? The how far you've come and evolved?
Well, I don't actually feel I've moved on at all, really.
Okay.
It's being in the same place, doing the same thing, but slightly differently. God, that sounds terrible, isn't it? It's just about hang myself when you've gone.
Please don't.
But that's what it is, though. It's not, I don't feel like I've moved anywhere, really. I'm just still trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Really, that's what it is, I think. I certainly don't. I never look at things I've done or work I've done and think, oh, I should have done it that way. Because I can see good things and bad things in everything. Because I can remember how what I was trying to do when I drew these things. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And because there's so much of it, well, there used to be, but it doesn't really matter because the first line is it, because I did get to one point where I couldn't make a single mark without it thinking, oh, that's no good. Whereas obviously, because once you draw on a whole page, there's no one, even I wouldn't notice it anymore.
Yeah. So. Well, the introduction that you did to the collected Last American a number of years ago.
Oh, wow, yeah. Stream of consciousness.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's dripping with self-doubt.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Well, that... I had such a lot of trouble with that. Well, see, the thing about that was because I'd been off sick for about 3 years or so. Mm. So it was the first thing I was doing. Because before that, I'd done Slate.
Right, yeah.
And now I'm doing this. And I thought Slate was really, really good. I mean, there's bits about it I don't like now, but you know, most of it, it's all right. And so I was thinking, well, I'm not going to draw it like Slate, but it's I've got to get back to that peak.
Yeah.
That I was at, you know, that. And so it really was difficult. I mean, by the end, I was, it's like I always do. I mean, the first two books were, I'd ink them on sheets of paper and ink them again on the paper through a light box, you know. Yeah. And, but by the end, I was just penciling and inking on board, you know, and it was much better by then as well. Mm. There's one couple of pages in there, I think the best thing I ever did. So obviously it was going all right.
Having been there at the very, well, in Prog 2, to now be at Prog 2000, what's been your reaction to that?
Well, to me, 2018 now is just part of Britain, really. it's there, you know. It's like,
yeah.
It's, perhaps it'll always be there now, I don't know. But Because I mean, when it started, I didn't even think, is this going to last?
Mm.
And I just wanted to do some work.
Yeah. You know?
And the fact that it's gone on for so long is to me, it's just like sort of Coronation Street or something. You know? It's got a loyal core of people who read it, and you know, and the work can be reprinted and all the rest of it. And it's just like it's got a life of its own. So, because I don't like or dislike it, or it's just there.
I
used to have, when I first started, I suppose I had an emotional attachment to it, but I haven't felt that for a long time.
Okay.
I mean, I'm glad it's still there, you know, but I mean, it's just, because I find that when I worked with Archie Goodwin, I thought, I'm doing something I always wanted to do. And yet I still had the same problems. That didn't make any difference. You still got a white sheet of paper in front of you. And so that's the thing. I mean, if it's whatever you're doing, whoever it's for, whether it's something you're really keen on or whatever, you still got the same thing. That's why I was saying with conventions, actually, that people are slapping you on the back and buying you a drink, you know, on a Monday morning, you still got a white sheet of paper to fill in. So it hasn't helped.
Yeah. And I guess it's been such a fundamental part of your life for so long that it's wallpaper. It's a fundamental part of your world.
Well, it's like
world.
Someone you've known for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, you don't even know what they look like anymore, really. Well, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes you look at someone you've known for years and suddenly you see them, like actually see them for once.
Yeah.
And then you think, oh, yeah. And then you go back to what you were, being used to them. So.
And that's all we have, Earthlits. Thank you so much for listening to our two-part interview with Mick McMahon. I hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as I enjoyed doing it. I want to say a huge thank you to Mick for being so very generous with his time and talking to us for the 2080 Thrillcast Supplemental. And I want to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in for what has been a fantastic insight into Mick's work and the way that he sees himself, an incredibly humble and self-effacing guy. So it's been wonderful to see everyone's reaction and to see how many people have been influenced by Mick over the years. We will be back in 2 weeks' time, Earthlits, for more from the galaxy's greatest comic, Splendig Verthrig. Now, are you reading the galaxy's greatest comic? 2080 is in orbit every Wednesday from all good news agents and comic book stores. 2080 is also available digitally. You can get PDF copies, which are DRM-free, from our website at www.2080online.com, or you can download the free 2080 app for Apple and Android devices. Now, you get that by searching for 2000 space AD in iTunes and the Google Play Store. There's also the Judge Dredd magazine, which is published in print and digital every month with more pages, more Dredd-centric stories, special features, and a bagged reprint magazine featuring forgotten 2080 classics. And don't forget that our graphic novels, including absolute timeless classics like Strontium Dog, Ace Trucking, Flesh, Judge Dredd, Slain, Robo Hunter, and many, many more, are also available digitally through our webshop and app. We're on social media with the latest announcements, competitions and freebies. Search on Facebook and Google Plus for 2000AD. If you're on Instagram, we're Insta2000AD, and you can follow us on Twitter, where we are at 2000AD. In the meantime, all hail Tharg the Mighty and Splundig Verthrig, Earthlits.